The Museum of San Marco. Two famous monks lived in the San Marco Monastery. One was an angelic artist who helped usher in the Renaissance. The other, a notorious politician who almost brought the Renaissance down. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. Thanks for joining me on this visit to the Museum of San Marco. On our walk, we'll enjoy an intimate peek into the spiritual life of 15th century Florence. First, we'll see the world's best collection of paintings by the monk known as Fra Angelico. His radiant work fuses medieval faith with Renaissance realism. Then we explore the living quarters of the monastery, the cloister, the common rooms, and the bedrooms or cells of the monks who lived there. Finally, we'll see the rooms of the monastery's most infamous resident, Savonarola. This austere monk ruled the city of Florence during a decade of unprecedented turbulence. Browsing through Savonarola's personal possessions, you gotta wonder what made this fanatical man tick. Now, let's head back in time to Florence in the 1400s. To a world teetering between medieval and Renaissance, Christian and secular. You'll find that world in the quiet cloisters, intimate cells, and heavenly art of the Museum of San Marco. To help us along the way, I've invited a good friend and virtual travel buddy. Welcome, Lisa.
Buongiorno.
Lisa will give us helpful directions and sightseeing tips throughout the tour.
And my first tip is to be sure you get our tour updates. Just press the icon at the lower right of your device. You'll find any updates and helpful instructions unique to this tour.
Things like closures, opening hours, and reservation requirements.
There's also tips on how to use this audio tour and even the full printed script.
Yes, so pause for just a moment right now to review our updates and special tips.
It's okay, we'll wait.
And now, get me to a nunnery.
Rick, it's a monastery.
Well then,
let the tour begin.
The tour begins, the monastery courtyard, or cloister.
After buying your ticket, you pass into the open-air courtyard. It's surrounded by shaded arcades. Pause near the entrance and take it all in. Rick?
Almost immediately, you can feel the spirituality of this place. It's a cool respite from the intensity of modern Florence. My advice? Slow down. Enjoy this tranquil monastery and take time with its meditative art. This courtyard or cloister was where monks could gather. They could get out of their tiny cells, socialize a bit, stretch their legs, and commune with nature.
Gaze down to the end of the hall, toward the painting on the wall of a crucifixion. The fresco also shows St. Dominic, the founder of the order of monks who lived in this place.
Dominic hugs the bloody cross of Christ like it's everything in the world to him. Monks who chose to live here had to dedicate their entire lives to Christ. They had to renounce worldly luxuries like wealth, sex, fine food, even pre-reserved tickets to the Uffizi Gallery. Enjoy the symmetry of the arches. The monastery was built in 1439, funded by none other than Cosimo the Elder. He was the founder of the Medici dynasty.
And Lorenzo the Magnificent's grandfather.
Indeed. The architect Michelozzo designed the cloister in his distinctive style, simple arches atop stately columns surrounding a courtyard. The Renaissance arches frame medieval cross-vaulting. That mix of Renaissance and medieval sums up Florence in the mid-1400s. It was a glorious time when Renaissance humanism seemed to dovetail perfectly with medieval spirituality. The newly built monastery welcomed in a community of Dominican monks. One of those monks was a promising artist who would soon revolutionize painting, Fra Angelico.
Let's see some of his paintings. A few steps to your right is a door. This leads into the hospice, or ospizio. Enter the hospice. You'll find yourself in a large room filled with Fra Angelico paintings.
This room alone could be considered one of the world's greatest museums of Fra Angelico's art.
Start by zeroing in on one of the larger paintings. Its frame is topped with three triangles. It's a golden altarpiece showing Christ being lowered from the cross. It's labeled the Palla di Santa Trinità, but is more commonly called the Deposition from the Cross.
The Deposition from the Cross by Fra Angelico. Christ has just been crucified. His sad followers gently lower his body from the cross. On the left are the grieving women wearing golden halos. On the right, the perplexed men. At the foot of the cross, Mary Magdalene kneels to tenderly kiss the toes of Jesus. The center of the painting is Christ's body, stretched diagonally across the scene, uniting it all. This painting is a great introduction to all the Fra Angelico art we're about to see. For Fra Angelico, painting was a form of prayer. His art was meant for churches and monasteries, not palaces or museums. Fra Angelico creates an ethereal world, serene faces, golden halos, blue skies, pink robes, and no shadows. It's filled with beautiful, meticulously painted details. He creates a mystical realm that seems to glow from within, like a stained glass window. This painting mixes both medieval and Renaissance elements. First, it's a typical medieval altarpiece divided into three parts with a gold frame and people with gold plate halos. And Christ's stretched out body? That's hardly realistic. He's posed symbolically, displayed like the body of Christ, the communion bread. But Fra Angelico also knew the latest Renaissance techniques, like the revolution in 3D. Look, there's a clearly defined foreground, the kneeling man in red, and a background, the distant city and hills. In between, the middle ground is established with trees. Within that 3D space, Fra Angelico places his figures. Fra Angelico also understood foreshortening. Look at the man in green who's lowering Christ's body. He bends forward realistically at an angle that's very difficult to draw. Fra Angelico brings this holy scene to life. He places it in our real world of grass, flowers, trees, and billowing clouds. It's true that Fra Angelico was an ascetic monk in a medieval monastery. But there was one pleasure he refused to renounce. His joy in the natural beauty of God's creation.
Let's turn to other paintings in the room. Work counterclockwise around the room.
By the way, because of restoration work, the paintings may get moved around a bit, so be flexible.
Working counterclockwise, locate another altarpiece, also with three triangular peaks. It features Mary in blue, flanked by monks in black and white. The label calls it the Trittico di San Pietro Martire.
The Triptych of St. Peter Martyr. Mary and the baby Jesus are flanked by saints. Notice how much bigger Mary is than the saints. That's because she's symbolically more important. The saints are members of the Dominican order, as was Fra Angelico. When he joined the order, he had his head shaved in the same tonsured hairstyle these guys wear.
Nice look.
He donned the same white robes with black cape. He was given a nickname, Fra Angelico. That means angelic brother. He was now part of the brotherhood founded by Saint Dominic.
Who stands on the far left?
The Dominican order also included great scholars, like Saint Thomas Aquinas.
On the far right.
The other monk, the one with the bloody red head, that's Peter Martyr. He exemplifies the unbending Dominican spirit. You can see how he was martyred in the small scene high above him. He was hacked in the head by heretics, but he died still preaching, writing with his own blood, Credo in Deum, I believe in God.
Continuing counterclockwise, find the next painting. It's actually two small panels sharing one long frame.
The Wedding and the Funeral of the Virgin. These two panels were originally part of an altarpiece. They were the predella, that's the scenes found below the main painting. Get close to the wedding scene. A bishop in green joins the hands of Mary and Joseph while the wedding guests rejoice. Though very small, the scene is surprisingly realistic. As a teenager, Fra Angelico had been trained as a miniaturist. He learned how to paint the tiniest of details. That's because that's how monks illustrated manuscripts before the age of printing. Admire the folds in Mary's gracefully flowing robe. In fact, all of the wedding guests have fine clothes with gold brocade hemlines. Each individual person is precisely outlined, as though etched in glass. Notice the Renaissance perspective tricks Fra Angelico was already exploring. He set the wedding in front of buildings that recede sharply into the distance.
It seems to me that Fra Angelico's paintings affect you on two levels. The devout could contemplate them as spiritual visions, or you could simply admire them for their sheer beauty.
Good call, Lisa.
Now continue counterclockwise to the next painting. It's a gold-framed rectangle with three bloops on the top.
The Last Judgment. Despite the advent of Renaissance humanism, Florence in the 1400s still had a medieval mindset. People feared the Last Judgment when Christ would appear. There he is, floating above it all, flanked by the blessed saints. The graves would open and everyone would be judged. On the left, the righteous play ring around the rosy with angels. But on the right, sinners are damned to hell. Fra Angelico's hell is straight out of Dante's Inferno. It's a hierarchical barbecue where sinners are burned, boiled, and tortured by demons. At the bottom of the pit sits a minotaur-like creature, Satan himself. Just to the left of hell, notice the crowd of big shots, corrupt kings, bishops, and wicked priests, all being herded to hell. And in the very center of the painting, a row of open tombs stretches ominously to that final judgment.
Like a three-dimensional highway to hell. Our next painting is the set of 36 square panels. Of the four groups of panels, we'll focus on the nine-panel set on the left.
Door panels of a cupboard for silver. The nine scenes on this big panel tell the story of Christ's boyhood. Fra Angelico tells it almost like a children's book. Fresh, simple, and straightforward.
Start with the scene in the upper left.
That weird-looking wheel is the wheel of Ezekiel. It shows the succession of kings that Jesus was descended from.
Next, to the right, is the Annunciation. The angel enters, kneels, fans his colorful wings, and announces to Mary that she'll give birth.
Annunciation scenes were a Fra Angelico specialty. We'll see one of his finest a little later. Up next, Jesus is born, a humble birth in a stable. Newborn Jesus glows, amazing as parents. The shepherds are almost too timid to look.
The story continues on the next line. Jesus is about to be circumcised by the high priest.
Look how precocious Jesus is, like he already knows what's happening. He just splays himself open and says, "Okay, I'm ready."
You know, this reads like a storyboard for a movie. Fra Angelico knows how to show through action, not just telling through symbols.
The next scene shows the three wise men bringing gifts. One of the magi kneels, perfectly natural, to kiss the baby's foot.
Next, showing baby Jesus in the temple, notice how tiny the baby is compared with the super tall priests. Fra Angelico tweaks reality to accentuate the baby's vulnerability.
On the final row of scenes, the Holy Family has to flee to escape danger. Mary and the baby ride off peacefully,
while Joseph is left carrying the luggage all the way to Egypt. The next scene shows what it is they're escaping, Back home, innocent babies are slaughtered in a jumble of gore, dramatic poses, and agonized faces. It's a great dramatic climax by Fra Angelico, perfectly setting up the final scene.
Yes, the serenity of this epilogue is a complete contrast. It shows young Jesus, now 12 years old, preaching in the temple, astonishing the elders. He's survived his tumultuous childhood and is now set to make history. In these 9 scenes, Fra Angelico shows us the miraculous, but it seems completely real, like it's happening before our very eyes.
Or as I see it, he shows us the beauty of everyday things and makes that seem miraculous. Let's turn to the next painting. It's the largest horizontal rectangular frame in the room.
The Lamentation. Christ has been taken down from the cross. Now he's mourned by loved ones. This painting once hung in a chapel that housed prisoners. It was the last thing many condemned men saw as they awaited their own execution. Fra Angelico creates a melancholy mood, but it's understated. The mourners don't weep and wail, they ponder. Notice how Christ's horizontal body echoes the horizontal crossbar above him. It's like Jesus has been welcomed down from the cross into peaceful rest. This must have been a comforting message from Fra Angelico to the condemned. As I mentioned, Fra Angelico means angelic brother. He had a reputation for sweetness, humility, and compassion. It's said he couldn't paint a crucifixion scene without crying. In 1984, he was beatified by Pope John Paul II. That's one step from sainthood.
At the end of the room hangs our next painting, an altarpiece with a marble frame. It's the tallest painting in the room, with 2 panels opening like doors.
The altarpiece of the linen drapers. Here we see all the elements of a typical altarpiece. The main painting, predella paintings below, and side panels that could fold over and close. Check out the impressive size of this altarpiece. Fra Angelico was paid a lot of money. And the fine marble frame is by Ghiberti of Baptistry d'Or fame. Though a monk, Fra Angelico collaborated with the other artists of his age and built a successful career. In the main painting, Mary and Child are majestic and monumental, if a bit stiff in the traditional style. Notice how they're flanked by lush curtains.
After all, this was paid for by the Linen Drapers Guild.
It's in the predella panels below that Fra Angelico really showed off his Renaissance chops. With exacting realism, he brings haloed saints down to the real world. They mingle with actual well-dressed Florentines of the 1400s. And the scenes are shot on location. Notice the actual Florentine cityscapes and landscapes.
Let's move on. Our final 3 paintings in this room all focus on the same subject, Mary and baby Jesus in a sacred conversation with saints. Each of these is large and square, dominated by Mary in her blue robe in the center.
Note that because of restoration, there may be only 2 of these paintings actually on display. Be flexible. And because the paintings can look quite similar, pay close attention to Lisa's directions to figure out which is which.
Start with the one that shows Mary and the saints backed by a long golden curtain that stretches across the scene. It's labeled Palla di Anna Lena, the Anna Lena altarpiece.
The Anna Lena altarpiece. Mary cradles baby Jesus on her lap. She's flanked by 3 saints to the left and 3 to the right. Behind them stretches a glorious golden curtain. This scene, from around 1435, is considered Florence's first true sacred conversation. Mary and the saints are supposedly conversing about holy matters. Fra Angelico virtually invented this type of scene, which was copied by so many others. Frankly, this first example of a sacred conversation is a bit crude. It's rigid and unrealistic, still rooted in the medieval past. It has the traditional gold background, though in this case it's a gold curtain. The saints stand in a straight line, either facing out or in profile, not the natural poses of a true crowd. There's little eye contact, and there's certainly no quote-unquote conversation. But it's still a wonderful scene. Look at Mary and Jesus' hands. They both grab Mary's brooch, directing our eye to that tiny detail. This forms the center of the composition. Everything radiates out from this in a series of circles. The brooch, then the circle suggested by Mary's halo, then the canopy arch above her head. Radiating still wider, another circle enfolds the saints. All this is set inside the square frame of the painting. This circle-in-square composition, pioneered by Fra Angelico, is found in many other sacred conversations.
In our next painting, we can see how Fra Angelico developed the sacred conversation over his lifetime. This painting is the San Marco altarpiece, or Palla di San Marco.
Look for the largest of the three holy conversations.
It shows Mary on a raised pedestal with trees in the background.
The San Marco Altarpiece. Cosimo the Elder commissioned this around 1440 for the debut of the monastery's new church. Fra Angelico theatrically opens the curtain, as it were, to reveal the stars of the new church, Mary and the Babe, on a raised throne topped with a canopy. The whole scene is like a stage set, with trees as a backdrop and two kneeling saints at the lip of the stage. Fra Angelico was learning how to breathe life into a stuffy altarpiece. He opens a window into a marvelous world where holy people mill about as naturally as mortals.
Locate the final sacred conversation. It's called the Bosco ai Frati altarpiece, or Palla di Bosco ai Frati. In this one, Mary has two little angels on either side of her, and her halo has writing inside it.
The Bosco ai Frati altarpiece. This altarpiece from around 1450 is Fra Angelico's last great work. The master used every stylistic arrow in his quiver. It has the halos and gold backdrop of his formative medieval years. The detail work, like the frieze across the top of the marble backdrop, shows his training as a miniaturist. And it has the monumental, naturally posed figures of the Renaissance.
Yes, especially St. Francis, just to the left of Mary. Look how he holds a book in one hand and turns out to gesture with the other, completely natural.
He stands in a relaxed contrapposto,
his weight resting on one leg.
Notice how the floor tiles establish a strong 3D perspective leading to the beautiful trees and sky in the distance.
I love Fra Angelico's colors. The gold backdrop harmonizes perfectly with the red and pink angels and Jesus' pale skin and Mary's dress, deep blue, with a gold hem and green lining. Where can I buy one of those?
Fra Angelico creates an ideal world of his own. It's perfectly lit with no moody shadows. There's never any dirt, frayed clothing, or imperfections. The faces are realistic enough, but they express no human emotion. These mortals, through sacrifice and meditation, have risen above petty passions and worldly concerns. They seem to have achieved a serenity that lights them from within. Before leaving this room, look for a portrait of Fra Angelico, the artist who painted everything here. It's a small square canvas dominated by his black robe, hood, and solemn gaze.
When you're ready, we'll be leaving this hospice room.
But we'll see more Fra Angelico as we explore the rest of this monastery. Seeing his work in situ is a glorious experience.
For now, exit the hospice room. Once back in the courtyard, head for the far right corner. There in the corner is a set of rooms marked Lavabo e Refettorio.
Hey, Lisa, do you know the difference between a monastery and a convent?
Of course, a monastery has men. A convent is for nuns.
Well, that's certainly true today, but originally it had nothing to do with gender. A monastery, from the Greek word monos, or alone, meant a place where either men or women could withdraw completely from society. A convent, from the Latin word for convene, was a place to only partially withdraw, while still working in the everyday world. That's why San Marco, though it housed only men, is often called a convent. Got it?
No, but that's what the rewind button is for. For now, let's find our next stop. In the far right corner of the courtyard, enter the rooms labeled Lavabo e Refettorio.
As you enter, glance to the right. This big, long room was the monk's dining room, or refectory. The food was simple and portions small, to focus your attention away from worldly pleasures. Notice the big painting at the end of the hall. It shows the kind of scene you'd see in this hall. People at long tables sharing a meal. But these are saintly diners.
Kind of like Leonardo da Vinci's famous Last Supper in that monastery in Milan.
Right. Remember, the central Christian sacrament, communion, is based on Jesus' last meal with his disciples.
When they gathered together to share food and drink.
So having a painting like this in a monastery dining hall gave the monks a sense they were communing not just with each other, but with the heavenly world as well.
Notice also the tiny balcony midway down the hall. This is where one monk would read from the Bible while the rest would eat in silence.
It brings to life the reality of this place when it was a hive of work, study, and prayer of real-life monks.
Now enter the much smaller room to your left,
which is where they washed up before eating.
The small room has several portraits. These give insight into the Dominican order, the order that established the rules of this monastery.
Paintings by Fra Bartolomeo. The artist Fra Bartolomeo, or Brother Bartholomew, lived in this monastery around the year 1500. That is, he was here a generation after Fra Angelico, Brother Angelic. Start on the left with a small painting of Jesus wearing the crown of thorns. It's titled Ecce Homo. Christ is curly-haired, creamy-faced, and dreamy-eyed. This was just the kind of Christ that young, idealistic Dominican monks could relate to. Like them, he was bearing the torments of the secular world with humble serenity.
Continue past Jesus to the fourth panel. That's Saint Dominic, or San Domenico, the founder of this order of monks.
Saint Dominic holds a finger to his lips. Shh, we have strict rules in my order. Around the year 1200, Dominic found God. He's shown here with the Star of Revelation over his head. Dominic became a friend of St. Francis of Assisi. They both preached a return to the simple, possession-free lifestyle of Jesus. He was so dedicated that, nearing 50, Dominic traveled across Europe on a 3,400-mile preaching tour, all on foot.
Hope he packed light. Two more panels along, the guy in the hoodie is St. Thomas Aquinas, or San Tommaso d'Aquino.
St. Thomas Aquinas was the intellectual giant of the 13th century and a Dominican. He used the reasoning of a scholar and the ideas of Aristotle to defend and explain Christianity. He's shown here with the sun of knowledge burning in his chest. Throughout Europe, the Dominicans became known as fierce intellectual defenders of the faith. None was more fearless than the man who became head of the San Marco Monastery.
A portrait of that man is by the door. The portrait of Savonarola.
This is the famous portrait of the infamous monk. He's shown in profile, wearing the Dominican hoodie. He has a big nose and clear eyes, gazing intently into the darkness. Savonarola took control of this monastery in the 1480s. A decade later, he took control of all Florence, putting the Renaissance in crisis mode. More on that later.
Ooh, a cliffhanger. I love it. Let's see more of the monastery. Return to the courtyard. Once there, continue straight ahead, just a few steps. Find the doorway on your right. This leads into the room labeled Capitolo.
That means it was the chapter house, a large multi-purpose room used for important meetings.
Enter the Capitolo and focus on the large wall fresco by Fra Angelico.
Crucifixion with Saints by Fra Angelico. Christ is crucified between two common criminals, silhouetted against a bleak background. This crucifixion is only one of about 20 crucifixions in the monastery. It's clear that Christ's torture and execution were what monks were supposed to focus on day and night. Scan the crowd around the cross.
Hey, I've seen some of these guys before. There's Dominic.
Yes, he's the guy kneeling at the foot of the cross. He wears the Dominican white robe and dark cape with tonsured hair and a star on his head.
And there's Peter Martyr again.
He's in the right corner, kneeling, with his bloody head. Standing behind him is Thomas Aquinas with jowls and the sun on his chest.
What a bunch of kooks. Hermits, martyrs, religious fanatics.
So it may seem to modern eyes. But being a monk was quite common back then. Many were younger sons of noble families who were not in line for an inheritance. For others, monkhood was a fallback if your career didn't pan out. Check out the big bell displayed in the room. This is the original monastery bell. One night in 1498, this very bell rang out. The monks were trying to warn Savonarola that a mob was coming to arrest him. Ah, but we're getting ahead of the story. For that, we need to head upstairs.
Another cliffhanger. Arrgh! To get upstairs, return to the courtyard and turn right. After a few steps along the corridor, turn right again through the next door. At the end of the short hall, you'll come to a staircase.
But before going up those stairs, take a peek into another cloister. This second cloister was a private one where only monks were allowed. Today, this is still the domain of the Dominicans. 600 years after Fra Angelico, monks still run this place.
Now, head upstairs to the first floor.
We're headed toward more works by Fra Angelico, done directly on the monastery walls. Remember that first and foremost, Fra Angelico was a monk. He served as prior, or head monk. He was even offered the chance to be Archbishop of all Florence. But he turned it down to stay a humble monk with his brothers in Christ.
At the top of the staircase, you'll come face to face with a Fra Angelico painting, The Annunciation.
The Annunciation by Fra Angelico. The angel arrives and kneels before Mary. He spreads his colorful wings and delivers the good news to Mary, a very humble and accepting virgin.
Hey, Rick, try this. While you look at the painting, sway back and forth like this.
Okay.
Look, the angel's wings sparkle.
Whoa, far out. Actually, I happen to know that comes from glitter mixed into the fresco. The effect was particularly evocative by torchlight.
And with a 15th century mindset, too. You know, this scene looks familiar to me.
Well, it's set under an arcade that's remarkably similar to the one in the courtyard just below. Fra Angelico loved to bring his heavenly scenes home to his monks, quite literally. Monks gathered on this spot for common prayers. Paintings like this helped them visualize Christ's life from the beginning, the Annunciation, to the end.
That would be the crucifixion, like the one over your left shoulder.
Yes, paintings like these are world-famous today, yet they were meant only for the private eyes of these humble monks.
Let's see some more. Facing the Annunciation, take a few steps to the left. Look down that corridor. It's lined with monks' cells.
That is, their bedrooms. This particular corridor housed the more senior monks. Novices and laypeople had rooms elsewhere.
Some of Fra Angelico's best work is found in the cells along the left-hand side.
There are 10 rooms in all along the left side, all decorated by Fra Angelico. We'll spend a few moments with each one.
Start with the first cell. Again, that's the first one on the left. Rick and I will direct you from there.
The monks' living quarters, with paintings by Fra Angelico. Each cell features a fresco painted by Fra Angelico and his assistants. This first bedroom shows Jesus on the morning of his resurrection. He emerges from the tomb, dressed in white, and strolls into the garden. His follower, Mary Magdalene, reaches out to embrace him, but Jesus gingerly sidesteps her and pronounces the famous words, "Nolo me tangere," don't touch me.
I love the flowers, the grass, the trees. It's like the whole world is coming back to life.
Well, enjoy it while you can. The next cells are more stark. The idea was to concentrate the monk's focus on just the essential subject.
Let's keep going. The next room on the left features the Lamentation.
Christ has been crucified, and now he's mourned by his followers.
Haven't we seen this before?
Yes, we have. It's basically the Lamentation we saw downstairs, but in reverse image. In this one, Christ's body almost levitates, not really supported by the lady's laps. The colors are muted, gray, brown, pink.
And there's Dominic again, with his trademark star on his head.
He stands contemplating, just as the monk who lived here in this cell should do. As the monk meditated on Christ's death, he'd be mentally transporting himself to this sad scene.
Continue to the next room. This one looks familiar, too.
Yep, it's another Annunciation. Notice the composition. Mary and the angel bend toward each other, forming an arch. Above them is a painted arch, and that's echoed by this room's actual arch.
And looking on is our old friend with the bloody head, Peter Martyr. How many Peters are there in this place?
I count 3 so far, and I'm determined to find 3 more Peter Martyrs before this tour is over. Think of the average monk's lifestyle. Every day was the same. Prayer, meditation, reading, bland meals, chopping wood, hauling water, translating Greek, attending Mass, then more prayer. After dark, the monk retired to one of these cells, these little barren rooms lit only by a lamp. His only kind of late-night TV was programmed by the prior, namely Fra Angelico. It came in the form of a fresco to meditate on before a few hours of sleep.
Let's change the channel and see the next room, another crucifixion.
Another crucifixion and another Dominic. It's clear that the dominant Dominican themes are crosses, Dominics, Peters, and Thomas Aquinas. But notice that each fresco shows them in a slightly different pose. Dominic might be kneeling, head bowed, hands folded, and so on. Monks actually copied these physical postures in order to attain a more spiritual state.
The next room is the birth of Jesus.
And there's another Peter.
That makes 4.
Pondering Jesus' humble birth, monks learned about how even the Son of God was humble. In monastic life, everything was a form of prayer. Meditating upon scenes like these, monks delved into different aspects of worship, humility, adoration, reflection, and so on.
The next room is the Transfiguration, where Jesus is caught up in a heavenly vision.
Here, Fra Angelico sets aside Renaissance realism to emphasize the miraculous. In an aura of blinding light, Christ spreads his arms cross-like. It dazzles the three witnesses. Jesus is joined by disembodied heads. These are the prophets, all spinning in a circle.
What did it mean?
Well, I'll tell you. I don't know. Remember that these rooms housed senior monks, so they were given some of the most challenging symbolism to meditate on.
The next room is even wilder. We go from Renaissance realism to bizarre Salvador Dali surrealism.
This shows the mocking of Christ. Dominic is reading about Christ's last days, and it makes him imagine the events. He pictures Christ as a king, on a throne, with a globe and scepter. But the king of the Jews is now blindfolded, spit on, slapped, and clubbed. And his torturers are, well, disembodied heads and hands.
Very mysterious. This bedroom must have been for the Zen master of monks. Up next is a room featuring the empty tomb.
The women are worried, but they're reassured by an angel who says he is risen, and Jesus has risen. He floats above them, seemingly invisible to them in his newly resurrected state.
He looks exasperated, like, "Guys, I'm right here." Let's head to the next room.
This shows Mary crowned. There she is, presiding triumphantly in heaven. To celebrate her glory, her faithful followers on earth prepare to exchange high fives.
Let's see, there's Dominic, Aquinas, Francis.
And there's another Peter. I just need one more to level up.
Oh, brother. Or should I say, oh, fra. Let's go to the final room.
This is the presentation in the temple. Baby Jesus is swaddled like a mummy as he's officially welcomed into his religious community. And there you have it, the final Fra Angelico painting we'll see on our tour. All in all, Fra Angelico and his assistants decorated 43 cells here in this monastery. And now, you've seen the best of them.
But wait, before we move on, look, there it is, your final Peter.
Thank you, Lisa. I've got them all, 6 now in total. And now I've reached the next to the last level in our little monastic game, beatification. That's one step from sainthood.
Now our tour turns a page to another chapter in the monastery's history, Savonarola. Continue around the bend and head down the hall. Savonarola's rooms are at the far end of the corridor. As you approach the end of the corridor, you'll run into 3 small stair steps. Don't go up those just yet. Instead, we'll be stepping into the last 2 rooms in the corridor. They're on your right. Here you'll find several of Savonarola's possessions on display.
Savonarola's banner and cloak. Browse whatever's on display in these corridor rooms.
Again, it's the last 2 rooms in the hall, just before the 3 steps at the end.
You may see fragments of a banner labeled either Crucifixion or the Standard of Savonarola. In the other room, you might see Savonarola's cloak and his personal crucifix. These possessions help bring the legend to life. Girolamo Savonarola lived here in the San Marco Monastery during the 1480s and 90s. He wasn't always the pious monk the world has come to know. You see, Savonarola started as a brilliant intellectual on the fast track for a career in academia. Then his cozy world was suddenly rocked. He heard a sermon on repentance. He was so moved, he traded in his scholar's robes for the cloak of a simple Dominican monk, like the one on display right here. He joined the San Marco Brotherhood. He quickly became known for his extreme asceticism, his devotion, and his knowledge of the Bible. He was made prior of this monastery and gained many ardent followers. They rallied around this banner that's now on display. It depicted a gruesome crucifixion scene. The monks paraded it through the streets of Florence, reminding everyone that Christ paid for their decadence, their worldly Renaissance sins. By 1490, Savonarola was becoming a celebrity in Florence.
Now climb those 3 steps. You enter the first of 3 adjoining rooms. They're labeled the Celle del Savonarola. These were Savonarola's actual living quarters.
Savonarola's cells. Savonarola lived in these three rooms. In the first room, locate the portrait bust of the hooded monk. This is the man whose personal charisma and prophetic fervor led him from humble scholar to prior of San Marco to
his crowning moment. You'll find that in the relief under the portrait bust.
Yes, that relief shows the exciting event when in the year 1494, Savonarola is being made ruler of all Florence. He stands before the Florence City Council, pledging allegiance to Florence's constitution. Now, check out the paintings elsewhere in the room, showing some of Savonarola's good deeds. One, showing the powerful monk reproaching two troublemakers, is set right here in Savonarola's actual study.
Which we will see now. Step into the next small room, Savonarola's study, labeled the Studiolo. You may see some of his actual possessions on display.
Savonarola would work at this desk, seated on this simple folding chair. From here, he wrote letters to the movers and shakers of the age, the Pope, the humanist Pico della Mirandola, even Lorenzo the Magnificent. And he would scour his Bible. It may be on display also, to prepare his next sermon. Savonarola was a fiery and charismatic speaker. His words were electric. Packed houses heard him rail against sin. Guilt-stricken listeners went into fits of weeping and wailing. He talked of the end times and pointed to ominous signs. The Medici banks were failing. Lorenzo the Magnificent died young. France invaded Italy, all as Savonarola seemed to prophesy. After his marathon sermons, it's said that people were seen wandering the streets, dazed and speechless. As Florentine politics descended into chaos and the Medici were exiled, Savonarola stepped into the vacuum of power. The masses turned to him, and he became the secular as well as religious leader of Florence.
We'll finish the story of Savonarola by stepping into the final room of his living quarters.
Room with Savonarola's possessions. In the display cases, find a few pieces of Savonarola's clothing.
They're made of wool, the roughest kind of wool, used by peasants.
Yes, Savonarola wore simple clothing even at the height of his power. It attests to his personal integrity, which was never questioned. At first, Savonarola's rule was just. He cut taxes, reduced street crime, and shifted power from the rich Medici elites to the citizens.
And this must be his chain of rosary beads. He'd use these to count his prayers.
That speaks to his unquestioned faith. In fact, Savonarola is considered one of the first great reformers. He spoke out against the corrupt church and the Pope's stable of mistresses. He called it, and I'm quoting here, the prostitute church, the monster of abomination. Savonarola's courageous stand and focus on faith influenced Martin Luther and other reformers to come. But Savonarola could also be uncompromising, even fanatical. That's what this relic here suggests.
You must mean his hair shirt girdle.
Yes, he wore this under his clothes. It was to purposely irritate his skin as a constant act of penance. As a ruler, Savonarola began to force his own personal moral code on others. He passed strict laws against swearing, blasphemy, gambling, and even fancy clothes. These laws were enforced by gangs of thuggish teenagers who patrolled the streets of Florence. At the height of his power, during Lent of 1497, his followers gathered in front of the Palazzo Vecchio. They built a huge bonfire called a Bonfire of Vanities. There they burned anything they deemed sinful. Dice, wigs, carnival masks, playing cards, musical instruments, even some books and paintings.
So was he a repressive tyrant or a brave champion of reform?
He was certainly a complex man living in turbulent times. Savonarola's rule became increasingly repressive, but the public was tiring of Puritanism, and the tide began to turn. While his enemies plotted a coup, Savonarola sat here in these rooms, studying and praying for guidance.
Looking out the room's window to the courtyard below, I can almost imagine what happened next.
As night fell, a rabid mob marched on the monastery of San Marco to take down Savonarola. They stormed into the cloister while monks fought back with clubs and the church bells clanged. The mob then raced up the stairs to this floor and grabbed Savonarola. They led him away to the Palazzo Vecchio. There he was tortured, tried, and sentenced.
Now turn to the painting in the room. This shows the dramatic climax of the tale of Savonarola.
On May 23, 1498, a huge crowd gathered in front of the Palazzo Vecchio. Savonarola was paraded out on a catwalk. He was publicly defrocked.
That is, stripped of his powers as a monk.
That was the ultimate humiliation of the day. Then he was hanged from the scaffolding shown in the painting. He dangled there, strangling, while teenage boys hooted and threw rocks. Then the crowd lit a bonfire.
That's what the little piece of wood on display here must be from. It's labeled Palo. It's an actual piece of wood from that bonfire.
This bonfire they lit was not to burn vanities. It was to burn Savonarola. The flames rose up. The crowd watched, spellbound by this man who had once so captivated their minds. The fire engulfed the body of Savonarola. Then, suddenly, his arm shot upward. Was he somehow still alive? Was this a final blessing or a final curse? The terrified crowd stampeded. Several were killed. But in fact, Savonarola was really dead. His ashes were thrown into the Arno River, and that was the end of Savonarola.
How tragic.
And
just as tragically,
this marks the end of our San Marco tour. But there's much more to this museum. Backtracking on this floor, you could visit the library with its medieval manuscripts and early musical scores. And near that is the cell of Cosimo the Elder, who often retired here for spiritual renewal.
You know, that's a nice bookend for this tour. Cosimo built this monastery. Fra Angelico decorated it. Savonarola brought its greatest fame.
And we have now seen the best of it. We hope you've enjoyed our Museum of San Marco tour. Thanks to Gene Openshaw, the co-author of this tour. If you're up for more sightseeing in Florence, we have audio tours for a Renaissance walk through Florence, the Uffizi Gallery, the Bargello, and the Accademia, featuring Michelangelo's David. Remember, this tour was excerpted from the Rick Steves Florence and Tuscany Guidebook, co-authored with Gene Openshaw. For more details on eating, sleeping, and sightseeing in Florence and environs, refer to this year's edition of that guidebook. For more free audio tours and podcasts, and for information about our guidebooks, TV shows, bus tours, and travel gear, visit our website at ricksteves.com. This tour was produced by Cedar House Audio Productions. Grazie.
Arrivederci.
And buon viaggio.